Hello again. This is Tony Westwood introducing the second in a series of programmes about orchestration. Last week, we highlighted how composers have used flutes in orchestral works. Today, we engage their neighbours, both physically in the orchestra and in terms of range of high notes that they can play, the oboes. There are usually two of them in the orchestra. The oboe is a double reed instrument, meaning that the player blows through a small aperture between two vibrating reeds. This produces a sharp, plangent sound that is so characteristic of the instrument. The oboe is not an easy instrument to play. Some wag called it the ill wind that nobody blows any good. A bit unfair, but there is some truth in that assertion. Shostakovich uses the oboe almost immediately in his Tahiti Trot, which is our signature tune. Then two phrases in the tune of the verse coinciding with the immortal words, "Darling, this place is a lovely oasis where life's weary taste is unknown," introduced by a short three-note horn phrase. And then, "Far from the crowded city where flowers pretty caress the stream," introduced by a short clarinet phrase, taking the oboe into its higher register. And later, the poignant side of the oboe is exploited with a sad little sighing phrase followed by the wistful tune at the end of the chorus. "Can't you see how happy we would be?" Shostakovich and the oboe. To tune us into the sound of the oboe, with a little more time to do it in, here is a Rossini overture, The Silken Ladder. First, we hear the instrument in slow and thoughtful mood, sharing its thoughts with the other wind instruments. The sound of the oboe in thoughtful mood, orchestrated by Rossini. A little later in this overture, and in contrast, he asks a lot more of the instrumentalist, and we hear a more skittish side to the oboe. So now, thanks to Rossini's Silken Ladder Overture, we know what we should listen out for. The oboe comes from a family of instruments that goes deep into the past. Double reed evolution has left it ruling the orchestral double reed higher range roost. But let's start with Ravel's Bolero, the piece that will haunt most of these Knowing the Score programmes. Ravel goes retro and bypasses the modern oboe for a solo, giving it to the old oboe d'amore, thus. Thank you. Oboe d'Amore, playing the first half of the tune of Ravel's Bolero. Let me remind my listeners that you're expected to be able to sing, hum, or whistle the whole of that tune by the end of this series. Let's go backwards in time from Ravel to when the Oboe d'Amore was amore in use in the orchestra, to J.S. Bach. Here it is, adding a counterweight role to the soloist in an aria, this role often known as an obbligato, in Bach's cantata BWV 147. Now a very familiar excerpt from the same cantata with two older oboes, the Oboe d'Amore, the oboe of love, and the other is the Oboe da Caccia, the oboe of the hunt, a very special sound given to a very special piece.
Thank you.
The piece, known in English as Gesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, illustrating the Baroque use of two antecedents of the modern oboe. This connection with history inspired a few 20th century composers to give oboes prominent parts in works that they wrote to conjure up the musical past in a 20th century milieu, so-called neoclassical writing. We will have one piece by Stravinsky, one by Respighi, and then Ravel again.
Thank you.
three pieces evoking the past by using the modern oboe, Serenata from the Ballet Pulcinella by Igor Stravinsky, Laura Suave from Ottorino Respighi's second suite of ancient airs and dances, and the second minuet from Le Tombeau de Couperin by Maurice Ravel. Earlier, I drew attention to the sharp, penetrating sound that the modern oboe makes. The classical orchestra of early Haydn did not yet have flutes and clarinets, so the oboes had hegemony as lead soprano wind instruments and topped the wind chords. This is what that sounds like. A minor key example taken from the start of Haydn's Farewell Symphony No. 45. Contrast that excerpt from early Haydn with the orchestra of late Mozart, where the sharpness of having lead oboes is mitigated by the rounder sounds of the flutes above, clarinets and bassoons below. This is another minor key start, that of Mozart's famous 40th symphony. Listen to how much rounder and fuller the sound of the wind band is when they join the strings. The sound of a classical orchestra at the end of the 19th century, Mozart 40. Take the flutes away, leaving the oboe at the top, and you get a very different sound, as illustrated here by Beethoven. The first and last chords of Beethoven's 7th Symphony 2nd Movement, the sharpness of the oboe given prominence by the absence of flutes. That must be the shortest performance ever of that piece. Listen to the same effect in two very well-known piano concertos, and as it happens, they're in the same key as the Beethoven. Thank you. the oboe, introduced each time by arresting piano chords leading the wind band at the start of Schumann's and Grieg's piano concerti. Later in his concerto, Grieg uses the penetrating sound of the oboe to cut through the strings. Not literally, dear listener, that would be a disaster. Cut through the string sound to play phrases that answer the pianos. No one else in the wind band could do that, as Grieg understood. This penetrating sound applies to the oboe's middle and low register. Later I'll show how very different the oboe sounds in its high register, but here is Prokofiev's Doomed Duck to quack in the oboe's lower register. Not easy to play. No Child's Play, The Duck, from Peter and the Wolf by Prokofiev, playing in the lower register of the oboe. When we hear the duck from inside the wolf's belly, it is transposed up an octave, giving it a distant, sad, pre-digestive sound. In his Lieutenant Quijet suite, Prokofiev dashes off a nasty seven-note bit of writing for the oboe, a very rapid two-octave arpeggio in E-flat minor. Here it is. And again in context. Oboe Quicksilver, the romance from Lieutenant Quijet by Prokofiev. Gustav Mahler also used the oboe's low register for the gentle minuet theme at the start of the second movement of his third symphony, also not easy to play. Now I wonder if anybody who didn't already know it noticed that in a fussy bit of orchestration, Mahler gave the very last note of that tune to the first flute. Rewind. Well, well, the joys of orchestration. Let's shift to the other end of the oboe's range and hear some more Ravel. At the start of his one-act opera, L'Enfant et les Sortilèges, Ravel gives the two oboes a long, smooth, undulating tune, playing in parallel, very softly, to set the magical tone of the story. Hell to play, Mr. Ravel! Thank you.
j'ai pas envie de faire ma page. J'ai envie d'aller me promener. J'ai envie de manger tous les gâteaux. J'ai envie de tirer la queue du chat et de couper celle de l'écureuil. J'ai envie de gronder tout le monde. J'ai envie de mettre ma mort en pénitence.
The Oboes, opening Ravel's opera L'Enfant et les Sortilèges. To play continuously and smoothly like that, the oboists have to employ something called circular breathing, breathing in while blowing out. That opera, by the way, is a feast of interesting orchestration. Give it a go sometime. Maybe we'll come back to it in the series. Another example now of two oboes playing in parallel. This one I've played myself in my time with the Bulawayo Philharmonic Orchestra. Not easy to play nicely, neatly and together. Did you recognise those octaves on G? Yes? No? The Emperor Waltzes, Johann Strauss. Now a bit more of that waltz. Forget the tune, feel for the oboists. Two oboes dancing a waltz by Strauss. The oboe's Middle Eastern roots are sometimes called upon by composers when trying to create an oriental feel to the music. Here's Camille Saint-Saëns doing it to perfection. The oboe leading the bacchanalia from Samson and Delilah by Saint-Saëns. The oboes are also called upon to imitate a hurdy-gurdy, this time by Mahler. Oboes hurdy-gurdying in the third movement of Mahler's First Symphony, an Eastern connection there too. And very importantly, and I have been remiss to leave this so long today, apart from the exoticism, the oboes can tear out your heart with pathos and emotion. Think of Gabriel's oboe. Knowing that, Don Juan employs one with the permission of the pimping Richard Strauss. ravishing. Seduction by Oboe, with a little help from the clarinet, in Don Juan by Richard Strauss. The oboe will seduce us all in the final piece in this programme, but let's hear it in an obbligato role again, in a Mozart concert aria. This is a classical oboe conversing with the soprano. Playing along with Anna Prohaska in the Mozart concert aria Vorrei spiegarvi o Dio was the oboe. Most listeners will know that the oboe is used to play the tuning note at the start of orchestral performances. This is because it has a very narrow range of harmonics, making it easy to tune to. This feature also allows the oboe to draw attention to itself when long notes are held, such as this one in Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. The oboe, drawing all the attention to itself by holding a very long G and then playing a haunting little tune that Beethoven gives in his Fifth Symphony. In Mozart's Concerto for Two Pianos, there's a wonderful section in the middle of the slow movement in which the first oboe holds a very high note for a long time. The first oboe is then joined by the second oboist in a ravishing bit of orchestration. Let's tune into this slow movement by beginning at the very beginning, where you'll notice that a long note is held by the oboe to establish their presence in this pared-down orchestration. And now the ravishing middle section that I promised. Mozart's wonderful use of the two oboes that he put into his orchestra for the slow movement of his piano concerto for two pianos. Another concerto now, one in which an orchestral instrument, in this case the oboe, pretty much upstages the soloist. Thank you. After that, the oboe's wonderful tune, supported by the woodwinds, the violin soloist is almost an intruder. That was the slow movement of Brahms's violin concerto. We end with an Oboes in the Orchestra piece de résistance. I wanted to play Ronald Binge's The Watermill, one of the most beautiful oboe solos I know, but it breaks my rule because it really is a piece for oboe strings and harp, so it is a quasi-concerto movement. I've chosen the slow movement of Bizet's Symphony in C major to represent the most satisfying piece for an orchestral oboist to play. The movement is in A minor, perfect for our plangent player. Winding down after many minutes of playing a wonderful tune through a small hole in a demanding instrument was the first oboe player of the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra in the A minor slow movement of Georges Bizet's symphony that ends with a chord so like the one we heard earlier from Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. Well, I think it's only fair that we give his or her lips a long rest until we meet for the next Knowing the Score programme, in which the clarinets of the orchestra will be taking the primary role. So, until then, it's goodbye from Tony Westwood, Knowing the Score, and the orchestral oboes.